This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling, welcome to a brand new podcast to the feed that we all hope you're going to enjoy. I think it's a pretty great concept, and we'll talk about it in a minute. But before I jump into it and kind of do the intro and what this is all about, I do have, this is Sean Kidd, by the way, and I do have three co-hosts with me tonight. And with this pod, we'll kind of have a rotation going on. The first two episodes, we're going to have the same folks on. I'm going to host, but we'll have our same panel, and then we're going to have a rotating host, rotating panel as we move forward. So I will talk about that, what we're going to do here in a minute. But first up, I would like to introduce one of my co-hosts, or actually the host of Wrestling's Chicken Salad, Ben Locke. How are you tonight?
Hi, thank you, Sean, for having me on. And it'll be nice to actually watch a good match with you for once.
Well, based on the concept of this pod, yes, it should be very good matches. Absolutely.
I'm stroking my beard, and I'm going to say, or is it?
Or is it? Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. So, Ben, welcome. Glad you could join us tonight. My other two co-hosts are actually with me on NWA Crock and Roll. Up first, Colin McDougall, how are you doing tonight?
Good morning, good evening. It's not actually morning. I finally get to talk to you, Sean, before midnight. It's quite strange.
7 p.m. our time, so yes, good time of night.
Yes, it is approximately 10 Alexander's past 11 here.
Here we go. You had to get your Josh Alexander dig in. You know what? I am going to be the big person in this, and I'm going to move right past that. So I hope you felt good about that. I'm going to move on. It was Colin, great to have you on. So thank you for joining us tonight. This should be fun. And last but not least, he is also one of our co-hosts on NWA Crock and Roll, but Scott is on like four or five other pods with me. Scott Shipley, how are you tonight?
Sean, I'm happy to be here. I'm doing well tonight. I'm real interested in this new pod that, we're the maiden voyage for it, and I look to see what everyone thinks.
Yes, welcome. And yes, we are the guinea pigs. We are the virgins, so to speak, to launch this podcast. So we'll just jump right into it, and I'll explain what the concept is. So we have a side chat where a lot of the time the chat dives into wrestling matches and this match is great. And we do all these lists over on the PTBN feed where, you know, we do greatest matches of all time. We did the greatest WCW matches. So it kind of spurred a thought in my head a little bit around, you know, what if there was a pod where we just talked about what many consider or perceive the greatest matches of all time in history? And it kind of got my juices flowing. I was thinking through it. So we are going to call this podcast PTBN Pedestal. And really what it is, every episode we're going to watch one match in wrestling history that many people put on that so-called pedestal as one of the greatest of all time. And we're going to have categories, we're going to watch it, live watch it, and then we're going to rank it at the end. So let me explain to you how this is going to work. One match per pod, You'll have a rotating panel, rotating host. It could be two, it could be four people, it could be five people, it could be two or three. There's no set number of people that will be doing the show. There'll be one host and co-host. There'll be three categories. One will be the build to the match. The second will be the match itself. And then the third category will be the historical relevance of said match. And that'll be a scale of 1 to 5. For it to be ranked a pedestal match, it'll have to rank at least an overall 4 between all the folks that are on the pod. So, for example, if Ben decides the first match we watch tonight is a 5 and I go a 3, then obviously that'll balance each other out and so on and so on. So if anyone has an opinion that differs, it allows some wiggle room for it to still be considered a pedestal match. So that way, no one can have a perceived shit take. No one can have, you know, everybody has their opinion. The one thing I will say about this is we are really looking at it from an open-end lens and how we look at the match and things like that, because we really want to go deep into these matches in terms of the reality of how great they are in context to wrestling history. So, guys, with that, anything I left out, or do you think I covered all my bases?
I think you covered all the bases, Sean, and it sounded better than when you wrote it out to us.
Well, yeah, verbal is much better than writing. I appreciate you pointing that out, Scott. Thanks a lot. So here's the deal. So are you ready to talk about our first match?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't even trying to be rude. I was just like, it sounds great.
No, it's all good. I'm glad Ben got a good laugh at it. That was good. So we're going to jump right into it. So our first match we're going to look at. Ben, you want to say something real quick before we jump in?
I was literally going to say, you know, I laugh at anything. So
No, it's all good. So are we ready to talk about our first match?
Yes.
All right. Our first match of PTBM Pedestal is one many people really, truly enjoy. I have been accused of having many different takes on this one, so I thought it would be a great one to open up with. And it is going to be the Randy Savage versus Ricky Steamboat Intercontinental match from WrestleMania 3. So I picked this one for a main reason. One is because I'm hosting, and two, to give me a different lens or a different view, or maybe different opinions in how we watch, or maybe I'll have a different view or a different opinion as we watch. So we can truly make this kind of like our first match. And it's kind of like WrestleMania 17, where we did that pod that we'll never end up resolving in the end, but at least we got to say our feels on those matches, and that kind of stemmed from I think how I felt about that pay-per-view. So it's good to get this Savage thing out of the way after many, many years of conflict, and I feel good that we're doing this one first. So with that, gents, would you like to talk? We're going to jump right into the build, and then we'll rank the build right before we watch the match. You guys ready for that?
Yes.
All right, so this feud started on November 22nd, 1986. And it was during a TV match on Superstars of Wrestling. It was for the Intercontinental title. It was Savage and Steamboat. So it's kind of a one-off random Intercontinental title match, which for a Superstars match is pretty incredible. During the match, Macho Man threw Steamboat outside the ring, then proceeded to drape him over the barricade and drop his double axe handle on him and hurt his throat. Then he dragged him back into the ring, and then he dropped an elbow with a bell onto Steamboat's throat, which caused all sorts of panic, all sorts of chaos. It took 8 people to come out on a gurney and drag Steamboat to the back. In the meantime, the commentary, Jesse and Vince are talking about how his face is turning blue, and, you know, they're really selling it. So I thought the first initial part of this was absolutely fantastic in how they started this. So, Ben, I will go to you first. What did you think about this first initial kind of setup of how this feud evolved? Ben? Oh, no.
I apologize. Oh. I was on mute. I do apologize.
It's all good. Go ahead, Ben. It's all good.
I was being polite and letting you talk for once.
No, it's all good, Ben. Go ahead.
What I was going to say is, on all the pods, we take the mick out of your age quite a lot, Sean. But I'm the second oldest on this call tonight. So what I will say is, remember the time we're dealing with here, boys. This is 1986. It's a simpler time, but it's also a more hardcore time. Like, you know, we're not dealing in the PG rating era now where everybody's going to be safe, you know, nicey-nicey, safety-safe. Like Sean says, you know, this is a brutal attack that Savage does on Steamboat, and that should never be forgotten as the beginning to this, because you just didn't see attacks like this on TV. I mean, there's a little bit of blood. It's a proper violent affair, even for this time period.
I agree. So I'm with you. I kind of feel like this first initial shot of this feud is amazing. And as a 13-year-old kid watching this on a Saturday morning, I was quite appalled because I didn't understand wrestling was what it was. I kind of took it relatively seriously. So, and then, of course, when they said Steamboat's face is turning blue, I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God. So, yeah, relatively naive 13-year-old Sean watching this for the first time. Colin, what did you think of his kind of opening shot of this feud?
Yeah, it was very, very different from its time. Now you see guys like, well, I remember they did a, you know, semi deep cut for just before Jake's time on Ruthlessly Aggressive, but they did a throat injury angle with The Undertaker and Maven, which didn't quite have the same sort of impact on it. But if you're thinking late 86 and you've got this, there's no internet, there's no I don't know what sort of circulation a dirt sheet had, or if there was any. But you're thinking this is very out of place. I think it sort of hit home all that better because it wasn't anything you saw. So it could have been, it could be very, as you said, Sean, you take it at face value and for what it's worth.
Yep. And Scott, what did you think of this initial build here?
You know, as I've been, as I joined the Croc and Roll podcast team, it kind of reminded me of like a Crockett type angle, you know, where they broke Dusty's ankle and everything. So it added some realism, and that's something that you didn't really see it, as Ben said, with WWE and WWF in 86. Like, you didn't really see that. Like, we were having, like, you know, who is the king, Harley Race or JYD type angles. But this added some realism and made Savage look like a killer. And like you said, Sean, you were worried that Ricky Steamboat was going to die. Like, I'm sure I would have been the same. Like, I went back and watched this years after the fact, obviously, and I knew what happened, but it's a pretty hardcore angle.
Yeah, it is for its time. It's an interesting correlation you brought up Crockett. But full disclosure, I was a big Macho Man Savage fan. I, you know, gotten in him a lot. Steamboat, I was kind of hot and cold on because I didn't really understand Ricky Steamboat or his history or his past. To me, he was just another kind of like middle of the pack wrestler that, you know, they would throw on TV. But so I didn't have any concept of Ricky Steamboat, but still, this was pretty interesting in it. The other thing, and I'll add to this in context, and we'll talk about this, we'll go through the rest of this feud, but I want to get your initial thoughts on the opening part of this. But the other great part of this is it gets out of control, and Bruno Sammartino's in the back outside the locker room, and he was approached by Savage, and Savage was super repressed what he did to Steamboat. And Savage, Sammartino got so enraged, he attacked the Macho Man, and he had me pulled off by Hillbilly Jim, SD Jones, and Corporal Cursor. So just another really great element to this feud is Bruno attacking him. And then we actually had some Bruno versus Savage matches coming out of that, which I thought was really cool. So anyway, we continue the feud. We go on. Let's see. We got some updates from Steamboat's wife, Bonnie. He spoke to Gene over the phone regarding her husband's recovery. Updates continue to be given out on a regular basis. Including interviewing Ricky's Steamboat's doctor. They continue to keep Steamboat off the air while they sold the injury, keeping the fans wondering if he was actually hurt. And it wasn't until December 20th, which is almost a month after the incident, that Steamboat showed up on television in an infamous scene where we see footage of Steamboat in a doctor's office trying to learn how to talk again, which was absolutely incredible. A week after that, Steamboat gave his first interview since the injury in his hands. While the Dragon was healing, the champ was getting ready for his next title defense against the man he had a previous feud with, which will probably be a bone of contention in a lot of my discussion tonight, George Animal Steel, who obviously had feelings for Elizabeth. And then on January 3rd, Saturday night's main event, Savage put his belt on the line against Steel in front of fans. And as Savage and Steel fought pillar to post, it was towards the end of the match that the Macho Man to get the better of Steel. Then when the ref lost complete control of the match, Savage left the beaten Steel in the middle of the ring to get the same foreign object that, you know, the ring bell that he did to Steamboat. And as Savage began to climb the rope, Steamboat ran out to save his friend from suffering the same fate. So there's a lot of matches in between and to build to this. But obviously, here we are. We are getting to March 29th, 1987. Let's think about it. So it was November. So it was December, January, February. This had a four-month build, which was pretty great at the time. You don't get four-month builds nowadays very often. So before we jump into the match, I'll go to Colin next. What did you think about the rest of the build up to this point where we're going into WrestleMania?
I think it was on point. I think they hit everything that they needed to hit. I think it was, from such a hot start, I do think that they did very well to keep it going. Obviously, more than that point in time, you're used to the longer term build, so a 4 month build to one match, not necessarily difficult for them, but I think it's important that they, whereas just now, I think Ben talks about this quite a lot, where they've got this incessant need to have two or three matches in a row. There's no real need to peak at the first match, but in this one, they've masterfully crafted it so it would peak at WrestleMania, and they just, I think they did it very, very well. I think it was masterfully crafted to get to this point.
Okay, so Colin, while we're on it, so from a build perspective, on a scale of 1 to 5, what would you give it?
Certainly for the time, I would give it at least a 4, because it was very different from a WWF point of view. I do agree with Scott that it is more something you would see in Crockett, where along the lines of the dusty broken ankle, but it did even go that one stage further, because it was like sort of coming across as life threatening as opposed to career threatening at the start. I would say it's comfortably at least a 4.
Okay, 4 for you. So Scott, how about you? Your thoughts on the build, and then give us what your 1 to 5 ranking would be on the build for this.
I'm going to go with the ranking first and say a 4 as well. Just basically echoing after what Colin said. When I think of like the build to this, I think of what you said with Ricky Steamboat trying to learn how to talk again. Like, you know, it's corny now, but at the time you're like, oh my God, is he ever going to be able to speak again? He had his wife out there, which adds some realism, like, you know, because this isn't like 90s WWF where they had like jobs and everything. Like, this guy had a family, and it's like, you know, interviewing his wife and she's like, I don't know what's going to happen. So I'm going to go with a 4. I did like that they didn't. I just wish, like, I know they had like house shows and this was a different era, but this is going to lead to some of the issues I have with the match. Is I thought it should have been a brawl, but like I said, we'll get to that. So I'm just going to go with a 4.
Hold that thought, because I might have some. That's why I wanted to do a live watch so we could all talk about that. But I might be a little aligned with you, Scott, but we'll see. And Ben, what did you go on? What are your thoughts on the build overall and your final rating 1 through 5 on the build?
So I'll quickly mention the George Steele thing, because I know you've got a bit of an issue with that, Sean.
A little bit, yes.
He doesn't detract anything. He only detracts a small step, and I'll say why. And, you know, if the boys want to jump in with this, what are the two things Randy Savage in the WWF is obsessed by? What is he defined by in the WWF? Two things. I'll throw a question back at you.
Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Yes. Elizabeth.
And his title.
Elizabeth and his title. And that is why George Steele is there. George Steele wants both things, and he's obsessed with both things, the same as Savage, and that's why he's there. Like I say, the build itself, I think it does take a little step back after the initial attack, adding, you know, with the whole Bonnie thing. But like Scott says, you know, he's got a family, and, you know, I go for that. A little bit of realism always goes a long way. So if I'm ranking the build, which I am, I would go a 4. If we were going quarters and things like that, I'd probably give 3.75, but I'm going to deal with whole numbers to make life a lot easier for everybody.
All right, so here might come your first shocker of the night, because I'm relating this back to 13-year-old Sean watching this on Saturday mornings. And for me, it was not miss. It was can't miss TV. It's like I would go back to the TV. Between that and the Andre and Hogan feud, it was almost must-see TV for me to watch what was going on with this feud every Saturday morning and on the Saturday night main events. I have big issues with Steele, which probably more so in the match than I do the build. One of the things I wanted to see is why couldn't Bruno be that middle? Like, Bruno attacks him, so it seemed like it made more sense for Bruno to be involved instead of George Steele, which I guess, again, you don't want to job out Bruno and you could job out Steele. So I kind of get it. But guys, I thought the build was really great for 4 months, and I'm actually going to go a 4.25. So,
oh, Ben, you didn't tell me you could go cores.
Yes, you can go quarters. I'm sorry, guys, you can go quarters. I apologize. Would anyone like to change their rank then?
I'll stick with four. I'm going to stick with four.
Okay.
I'm going to. Colin,
would you like to change yours?
No, I'm quite happy with four.
All right, and Scott.
I'm good with four as well.
All right, so I'm going to be the odd man out. So Ben, any concerns you had about me kind of underselling this stuff? I thought the build of this was brilliant, and it'd probably be higher if George Steele wasn't actually in it, to be honest with you.
I agree with that. Totally agree with that.
All right, so we'll move on. I'll do the calculations on this in a little bit. Let's go to move on. So we are now going to jump into the actual match itself. If you are listening along or watching along, we are paused at different points, so it's very hard to say because our partners across the pond are on one spot. We're on one spot because it's the difference between the network and the overseas and the Peacock. But what I will tell you is, if you pause at right at the beginning of the Savage interview before the match, where his back is at the camera, and we're going to watch the match from that interview all the way to the end, and then we'll talk about the match, and then we'll end the pod with the historical value and see if this match is truly a pedestal match. So are you guys paused and ready to go?
Ready.
Ready. Yes.
All right. So on a count of 3, 2, 1, play. So really cool interview here. Like, Savage starts with his back to the camera. Love his robe and just him shit-talking Steamboat here. Good stuff.
Yeah, his robe is great.
Yeah, that's the first thing. That's the first thing I was going to say. Truly magnificent robe.
Yeah, the other thing I want to add to it, because I didn't pause on that. Right before this interview, they do a whole recap of the entire feud. So if you're someone that's watching wrestling for the first time or this feud for the first time, they recap the whole damn thing. So they did a really good job with it. And now you get the first shot of the Silver Dome. I still, to this day, think this is one of the most impressive visuals on a wrestling pay-per-view I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love the carts where they bring out the wrestlers. I wish they would do something like that again with the stadiums. That I know that's where WWE, you know, had they been for SummerSlams and WrestleManias, but I think that'd be a nice little nostalgia touch, to be honest.
It really would.
What was that rumble they did where they had the big guys on the carts, but they'd never show it on camera?
Yeah, it was the gong carts.
Yeah, 2017, because they had it at the Alamo Dome again.
That was right. That was right.
Elizabeth looking beautiful. And I forget what they called the. Didn't they have a name for these ring girls? I forgot what their names were.
Tarts.
WrestleMania. Tarts. Is what you said, tarts?
Yes.
They're just tarts.
On a serious note, though, I mean, you know, the other great part of this build is just pure heel versus pure babyface here.
Oh, 100%. This is your classic heel versus villain feud. And it's Elizabeth with Savage is always an interesting dynamic because she's this little innocent girl that he's super protective of, but at the same time, he just treats her like garbage.
Yeah, talk about something that would not work today.
No, absolutely not.
No, not at all. So I'm going to score as we go. So quarter of a point off for the champion coming out first. Quarter of a point back on for the build up, and we missed it. But for the cup of coffee in the big time promo, this was his wee tiny wee cup. His cup of coffee in the big time.
For those who listen to the Tim Capel edition of Chicken Salad, we're going to have some inspired Steiner math going on throughout the night by the sound of things.
So the other thing, so we're at a Steamboat promo now. He looks really intense, but he's also like breathing heavily, and he's got this real like deep voice kind of to sell that whole throat thing. So, I mean, as you know, as savage as Steamboat's going to be in an interview, and at least there's no Bonnie here, so I think he gets points for that.
Okay, next thing I want to talk about before we start the match, gents. So this match is quite famous for its scripted nature, correct?
Yes, Savage was obsessed with going over this match. Yes.
Infamous for that. So, you know, yes. you guys are more of a Crockett and 80s guys more than me. That the The way it was done back in the day was calling things on the fly, correct?
Yeah, normally. Yes. They weren't. Yeah. I mean, this is a very, very – I mean, I think – I forget who it was. I think Steamboat had a notebook of move by move, like everything they were going to do in a match, and they had to memorize it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard him talk about, like, move 56 or whatever on a pod before.
Crazy, right? It's like, how do you memorize all that? So let's just throw it out there. How do we feel about Steamboat being seconded by George Steele? Because for me, immediately, it kind of takes away a little bit of that flair for me based on this should be a blood feud. And Steele being a comedy character kind of ticked me out a little bit, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me like now, and it didn't make sense to me when I was first watching it, where I was like, why is this weird looking guy with the green tongue, you know, seconding him? And I still don't really understand it. Like, I guess because like the whole, you know, he wants Elizabeth thing, but that's kind of like a heel move in my opinion. I think it would have been better if Steamboat just would have went out by himself and, like, you know, we have no chicanery with, you know, Steel, because it's not like Elizabeth was interfering. So it's not like he needed someone to counteract Liz. Then he could have brought in Bonnie, like you said, Sean. So.
Well, I don't want him to bring Bonnie. I feel like
I know, but I'm. Yeah. I would rather have Bonnie.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd have Bonnie or. I don't know. That's kind of a Sophie's choice for me, I guess.
It makes sense. For me, it makes sense to have him in the storyline, but not to have him. He doesn't need to be out in the match.
Okay, so we agree on that. Colin, what do you think about Steel being out here?
That's a bit strange. I suppose if he's been part of the storyline, you might as well be out there, but it's not
drag right there. Sorry, Cal. Sorry,
it's not as if Steamboat needs Steel to be the great equalizer.
Yeah. So yeah, go ahead,
Donald. It's not like I'm trying to think of a recent one. Like, it's not like when Triple H at WrestleMania 29 brought out Shawn because to sort of negate the Heyman factor. It's not like you're not getting that was the first one that sort of came to mind there, but it's not. Elizabeth doesn't do anything, so it doesn't need to be, the Steel doesn't need to be there to stop her doing nothing.
Yeah, and again, I know in a lot of chats I've ragged on this match a lot, but for me it's fundamentally, it's all about Steel. I mean, if you think about the opening of this match, you saw some great arm drags, you saw a choke, and now Savage is taking control of Steamboat as we speak right now.
Yeah, everything's perpetual motion. There's no rest holds. It's just balls to the wall, you know, wrestling. And like you say, would a street fight work? Yeah, it would work. But I love the fact that it's wrestling, and the best wrestler on the night wins.
Well, I like that. Listen, I like the wrestling too. Like, to be clear, as we're watching this match, I think we're going to see that this is a match unlike anything else you usually see in the WWF ever at this time. I think it'll probably say it transcends, but we'll wait till the end to say that. But I guess my biggest thing with that, I love the wrestling in this. I love me some good arm work. I love arm drags, but this is a blood feud. This guy almost crippled. Like, think about blood feuds in wrestling history. So think about Tully and TA. Like, and think about, and I don't expect the WWF to do a blood feud match like an I Quit match like they had, but this is like a known for its wrestling and its scientific moves and things like that. And that seems a little off for me in terms of it being a blood feud. So maybe that's part of my problem too.
No, I totally get that, Sean. I mean, we sort of saw that in the beginning where Steamboat has Savage up on a choke and he's like holding him up and then drops him. But that's like the only thing we've seen so far, because it's been like all Savage. And we did see that Steamboat was working the arm, but he tried to like crush his larynx. Like, you know, he should be coming out like I'm okay with them doing wrestling, but they should have had some like brawling to start maybe the first 5 to 10 minutes, then set, or since this is a quick match, brawling the first 5 minutes, and like, you know, then Savage starts going after the wrestling part of it to try to like throw Steamboat off his game. That's just what I would think. That's what I would like. I mean, I enjoy this match, but I just feel it would have. We'll get to my grade, but
yep. Yeah, we'll let it play out. No assumptions. We'll let it play out. So, but yeah, Savage is just totally. And that's the other thing. I think, as we go through the match, I recall Savage just absolutely dominating Steamboat for the majority of this match, if I recall.
And that's definitely what we're seeing right now. And I know we talked about Savage's robe earlier, but I love his trunks in this.
Yes.
And it's just, I think it's my favorite, like, Savage gear, to be completely
honest. When
you
think Macho Man, you think the star trunks with the Macho Man on the back every time. These pink ones are, these are definitely pedestal trunks, so to speak. So.
I mean, Sean nicked the Mr. WrestleMania thing, but it really started here, didn't it, with Savage? You know, you think about this six-year run.
Yes, that's a great point, Ben. I agree. I think Savage... Yeah, if you were to put it up there, absolutely, Savage had a hell of a run.
And one thing I do like is watching this is that Savage does go after the throat some. He just had a vicious knee to Steamboat's throat, which does add into the story, which I do enjoy.
Gollum, any thoughts on your end so far? You're on mute. Maybe he's on mute for a reason.
And Steamboat has go on, Ben.
Now I was going to say, don't tell me Callum's having the British internet issue, just as mine have cleared up.
He was having some internet. He said he was having some headphone issues earlier, so maybe he does. So I love this little back and forth. This whole sequence here is pretty great. I will give Steamboat credit. His arm drags are really fucking good.
See, I do understand what you two mean about it not being a blood feud and not being a street fight, but these are two great wrestlers having a great wrestling match.
Ooh.
with some great sort of punches and kicks, however you want to describe it, thrown in, and I love it.
And here we have Steamboat basically skinning the cat, which is a pretty nice visual right here. But then Savage just comes over and clotheslines him over the top. It's so great. And we like Steel has done nothing.
Just to break behind the scenes curtain a little bit. Callum does have a little bit of issues on the internet, so that's why he's not on, guys. So let's just keep moving forward. Hopefully he can rejoin us.
Yeah, we're doing all right. So, yeah, Steamboat's been clotheslined out now. That's where I am.
Yeah, these knees to his back are excellent, by the way. The Savage knees to Steamboat's back, I really like those.
And it's something you don't see that often either, which is pretty, which makes it look so much different. And, like, Steamboat's, like, near the fans and everything. And Steel's actually trying to do something, trying to get him back in the ring before the 10 count. So I guess that's why he needs him, so...
Well, that's the other thing. I feel like, all right, Steamboat's the face, right? And this is a blood feud, and he needs Dort Steel to help him back. And like again, this is like I don't think Steel is needed here, and that's really what I struggle with. And it makes Steamboat look bad because he does, just to be honest. And then here he goes, thrown out of the ring again. Fantastic! God,
so great.
It is really great.
And he climbs up to the top and up. Axe handle, and Steamboat is selling like a motherfucker right now. It's great. I mean, he just looks like he's dead out there. So I'm definitely enjoying this. What do you think right now, Sean?
No, it's good. Like I said, though, how much has Steamboat really done so far? It's been all Savage. Not that I mind.
Yeah. But like Savage has just been going back and forth. Like he's back in the room, like Ben said. Like he's just frantic moving and everything. Steamboat's back up. Savage off the turnbuckle. Elbow drop to the head. Elbow to the head. Now we got our first pin, Sean.
So Schiff, it is now just me and you because British Internet is taking out two of our people.
Jeez.
Well,
I resent that statement.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
I was gonna say the Wi-Fi is working. It's literally the network on my Xbox that's crashed.
All right, well good. Well, Ben, you can still talk through the match with us. Callum, welcome back. Sorry, guys. Hot start to pedestal pod tonight.
And
my network crashed and then it kicked me out the Skype call. So I think that this is just all part of the the great peacock transition that the UK is probably going to have at some point.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, is that happening in the UK as well?
It's going to be.
Okay, gotcha. All right, like, so in the meantime, guys, while you've been kind of in between, Savage continues to beat up Steamboat.
Yeah, Savage has gotten two near falls on him. Steamboat is up.
Oh, we got the gut wrench suplex by Savage.
That was very nice. And like they're already showing like how tired they are, because as Ben said earlier, it's just been frantic movement. It's been a pace that they're just cutting right here.
And gentlemen, pop quiz, how many pinfalls do you think are in this match total? Do you know?
No. I know we've already seen like two or three.
I've read this. I know it's over 20.
Okay, yes, it's 22.
Oh,
there you go. Oh!
Wow, that was hell of a bump right there.
These bumps where they're throwing each other out of the ring are insane. Like, these backdrops over the top rope are really well done for its time.
Yeah, and that looked like he got some air when that backdrop over the top rope from that Steamboat did on him. I do like this, like, you know, Steamboat can't win the title because of a count out, so he, like, goes on the outside on him, throws him back in the ring. That is some fight that we're seeing right there. It's just too far and in between.
I talking about 13-year-old Sean, again, this visual, this visual of the 93,000 people in the Silverdome is absolutely amazing. Like, to this day, this visual still pops me.
And Sean, you might have said this on a podcast, but did you watch this live or did you watch it after the fact?
I watched it a week after the fact on my uncle's videotape.
Oh, okay, nice. I was unsure how that was. But now Savage dominated the first third of the match. Now this is Steamboat's part. See, now Steamboat's on the momentum right now. Nice sunset flip right here, Sean. You see this? Oh, and Savage is holding on. It's just poetry right now, guys.
Well, I think Ben brought up a good point earlier. They did map out this match like sequence by sequence, so it wasn't boring and there was no rest spots. I mean, it's almost like they're perfectly following a script of a movie here, and they're doing a really great job with it.
I am fully back with you now, gents. You'll be pleased or displeased to hear.
Oh, no, I'm glad you're back. Definitely wants your insight here, so.
I mean, it's everything as well about the atmosphere of this crowd, of the event as well, because, you know, we're getting into the light, into the dark now, aren't we? So, you know, everything's, like, perfectly shot as well. And like you say, it's just such a frantic pace about things. They've, you know, look, Savage is now punch drunk.
Yeah, Savage's selling is amazing. Like, that slingshot, he hits the ring post and then he, like, gradually falls back into that pin attempt. Like, listen, I can shit on this match all I want. This is some really good wrestling sequence stuff right here.
Yeah, this is the stuff that, like, when kids watch it for the first time, this is what they fall in love with wrestling for, in my opinion. I know, like, Hulk Hogan and everything, but this is just, like, another thing.
Scott's dog's having a fun time watching this match too.
I know we're gonna talk about, like, you know, the historical bit after, like piggybacking on what Scott said, you can see why this match has been so, like, lauded by other wrestlers and to why they wanted to become a wrestler in the first place.
And honestly, the good thing is so far the steel interference has been very, very short, if any. Oh, and there goes the ref. What a hell of a ref bump that was, and by the way.
That was actually like a natural looking ref bump. Like, he just got caught up there. It's not
he looked like a ping pong ball getting hit by
he just happened to be there.
Yeah,
it's not like some of the TNA ones I know you guys have had to see, or, you know, some WCW ones we've seen.
Okay, we are talking pedestal matches. TNA is not allowed to be mentioned on this show.
I know, I'm sorry, but this is big here. Savage gets the visual pin.
Okay, so here's one of my issues here. So Steamboat, for the most part, has gotten his ass kicked this whole time. Savage literally just got the pin, and quite honestly, I would say if you were doing like a point scale on this, Savage has the upper hand if you were going to grade it, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Savage totally dominates this match.
And then Savage brings in the ring bell, and he's going to do what, you know, Sean mentioned before and take out Steamboat. And here's Sean's boy.
The ring bell that started everything.
I will say Savage does kick the shit out of George Steele's head right there. I don't know if you guys saw that, but he kicked him right in the noggin.
Yeah, you got a receipt there.
And then, see, I think that's too much Steele, in my opinion. It's like a late 90s WWF main event with the people running in, to be completely honest.
I don't mind Steele being there to stop him getting the ring bell, but yeah.
And that's another issue I have, is like he wins on a roll-up. He should at least hit his finishing move, which, what was his finishing move at the moment? Do we know?
Is it the cross-face
thing? Yeah, it's a
Yeah, sorry, I just had a brain fart. But yeah, he should have won with that or, you know, something high-powered instead of just a roll-up. Makes it look like a fluke win, in my opinion. Yeah. Where we've seen like, Savage dominate 60-75% of the match.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't that the same move he used to beat Flair for the world title on the first title reign?
I believe so.
Sorry, Ben, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm going to disagree with Scott because I like the fact it's a roll-up and a fluke win. I think that's perfect for the match because, like Scott says, Savage has got 60-70% of the match. He isn't going to hit a big move. It's going to be something. It's going to be something quick and, you know, literally something that, you know, quick 1-2-3, and that's what's going to beat him.
So yeah, so Savage gets to. I mean, so Savage clearly dominates, and Steamboat, as I get what Ben's saying, as the face, he gets by the seat of his pants. He steals the win. So I totally get what Ben's saying. So. Here, before we get to historical things, because I want to talk about that a little bit, let's go around and talk about the match. So, Scott, on a scale of 1 to 5, give us your thoughts overall on the match and then give us your rating on the match.
I really thought this was a great match. I keep stealing what Ben said. I'm sorry, Ben, but it's just in my head where it's just a frantic pace, and that's what it is. There's never a dull moment because as we, you know, putting a plug in for Croc and Roll, we did our summer watch of the show, Sean, and there were some matches that had some dull spots, and I was like, why am I even watching wrestling? But this was not one of those matches. It was quick and to the point, concise, did not have to go to be 20, 25 minutes to be considered a classic. It was done in 14 minutes, and that was great. But saying that, this may shock you guys. I'm going to go 4.25.
Interesting. All right, Colm, I assume you're still on, my friend?
Yes, I'm still here, yeah. This match, everything on the outside aside, from bell to bell inside the ring, when it was just Savage and Steamboat, that is sort of the blueprint for what is a great match. Scott that said that you can see why people would fall in love with wrestling watching that and how it's inspired so many people. Excuse me. I think it's one of those matches that when you just take into account the two guys that are in the match and nothing, none of the other fluff around it, that's one of the ones that you should show to people on first day of wrestling school and just go, this is what you need to, these two here are what you need to aspire to be.
Alright, and what would you rank it overall in terms of 1-5?
The match itself?
Yes.
I would go 4.25 as well. I think it's, again, just bell to bell stuff in the ring, without all the other fluff. I think it is excellent.
All right, 4.25 on two people. Ben, what are your thoughts on the match?
It was my number 3 on my WWE greatest match poll, and that is for a very good reason. It's just like I said in the earlier on when we were watching it. It's two great wrestlers having a great wrestling match, and it just proves that you don't need to be overblown. You don't need to be overlong to have a great match. It's just, and everything works. I'm still going to go 5, Sean. There's nothing there that I've seen that takes away from you. Because the Steele thing, right? So That's a bit like, I'm going to use the example of Eddie versus Brock at No Way Out. That the steel push leads that pit to the pin, but it doesn't directly come from the steel push. So I've got no problem with that because it works in the story of the match. So I'm going to go 5 on it still.
All right. Well, here let's see how this goes. So for me, I've been very critical of this match. It's the first time I've watched it in a very long time. I enjoyed the match itself. I still have fundamental flaws in. I love the wrestling. I think from a scientific wrestling standpoint, I think Savage as the aggressor was interesting. I would have liked to see a little more aggression out of Steamboat based on the fact that this guy tried to kill him and he couldn't breathe. The Steel thing, I don't think Steel needed to be out there. I don't like Steel's interference at the end because I think it makes Ricky look weak. And in the end, he's the reason why Ricky wins because he pushes Savage off the rope, and that's what happens. So for me, I will give it a 4. And for me, guys, I'll be honest with you, it is a gentleman's 4 because I could go a lot lower because I think it could have been much better. It could have been a much it didn't need Steel, and I think it could have been a little more fire to it. So I will go 4 to be fair. So Ben, is that a fair assessment at this point? Just to, because you're the one that always gives me the hell about how I feel about some of these matches. Is that
seem fair? I've told you before, your opinion is your opinion. We're all.
No, I know. I'm going with 4 just because I see the value of the match and I really enjoyed it, but I do have flaws with it because I think it could easily be a 5. That's my point.
I went 5 because like I say, everything's clean. It's clean. It's crisp. There's no botches. I don't mind the Steel interference because it all works in the story. However, I can see why people don't like it and would mark it down. So I've got no problem with that.
All right. Very good. So, as I calculate that, let's go into historical. Ben, I'll go for you. 1 through 5, historical relevance.
Okay, so there's so many factors here, Sean. So there's the historical relevance for Savage and for Steamboat. We all know that Steamboat is basically a transitional champion. He loses the title within about 2-3 months. But this match means so much to both men in their career. You could argue, I think it's Savage's best WWE match. It's certainly Steamboat's. That the Savage argument can be made. But I've already mentioned there are wrestlers who, became wrestlers in the 90s and the early noughties who used this match as their going off point. And also, that whole thing of guys wanting to go out and stealing the show, being the mid-card match and stealing the show, it starts at WrestleMania 3. It carries on through pay-per-views and WrestleManias today where guys want to go out and prove that they should be the main event. And, the main event's an attraction, but we're the match people really want to see. So I'm going to go for historical value. I'm going to knock it off. I'm going to knock a little bit off the Steamboat, but I'm going to go 4.5.
So Ben, the only thing I will say, you said something interesting that resonated with me a little bit. A 4.5, I think is totally fair for me. I'll talk about me in a minute. But one thing is interesting. You brought up that you thought this was Savage's best match in the WWF. I think I've been pretty vocal that my favorite match of Savage is actually from this same year. And it is against Bret Hart later on in the summer.
So that is a very, very good match. We had the privilege of watching that when you appeared with us. But yeah, it's a very good match. You know, if somebody said Savage versus Warrior from WrestleMania 7, I would not argue with that.
I would not argue that one either. You're 100% right. We might watch that on a future pod, by the way.
let's hot take, everybody. Randy Savage is a really good wrestler.
Absolutely. Column, historical value, 1 through 5. What'd you think?
For historical context, I think I'll need to go as high as 4.5, in all honesty. Excellent build that was unlike anything else you would see at the time. They stole the show, and on WrestleMania 3 was really just a one-match show with Hogan and Andre, and that's what got 93,000 people in the building. But to be to not be the one match on the one match show and still have people talking about it on and debating about it on a podcast 34 years later, if my my math is correct, you've pulled off something special. So I think it's historical context is got to be quite high, in my opinion.
Yep. So 4.5 for you.
Yes.
All right, Scott.
This may come as a shock because I was so down. Sound like I was down on the match. I'm actually going 5 for historical relevance. With so many wrestlers that became wrestlers because of this match. I remember, I don't know why this is stuck in my memory hole, but I remember WWE did a confidential episode about this match, and they had so many wrestlers that was on saying, like, this is the reason why I became a fan. So just of how many wrestling careers it kicked off, it's known as the benchmark for WrestleMania. It started like that. We need that one WrestleMania match. It's going to be a 5. I don't think it's Savage's best match. I think it's the Warrior match. And I don't think it's Steamboat's best match. I think one of his 3 with Flair's his best match. But for this night, they captured magic. And, you know, Ben said it was his top 3 match on his best WWE match poll. So it's going the full 5 for me because it still holds the test of time, like Callum was saying.
All right. So here comes the shocker. I am also going 5 for historical value. And here's why. In 1987 WWF, you did not get matches like this. A feud that is just, I mean, obviously Andre and Hawk was built up really good as well, but just from a pure wrestling athlete and a wrestling match standpoint, you did not get wrestling matches like this in 1987. I think one of the reasons why this match is so revered is because of its time frame. If you really look at 1987 as a whole, there are 2 matches that stand out from a WWF standpoint, from a good wrestling standpoint, at least for me. They both involve Randy Savage. I brought up the Bret Hart match, which nobody saw coming at the time whatsoever. It shocked the hell out of me when I watched it, and I freaking loved it ever since. And then this match. So even though I have my issues with it, from a historical standpoint, I think you all brought up good points. Scott brought up the point that, you know, a lot of wrestlers wanted to become it. A lot of wrestlers study this match as what they want to do, what they want to be, how they want to look. So regardless of the match itself, if you think historical relevant, I really have to go on 5 stars. Now, the other part is, the good thing is we're not grading the after part of this match in the aftermath, because Steamboat decided he wanted to spend more time with his son and, you know, obviously ended up, you know, losing the title of the Honky Tonk Man. I have another big problem with that. You build this great 4-month feud between 2 great athletes and then you give the belt to the Honky Tonk Man. I mean, that's a whole other story, a whole other pod. But so, yeah, so guys, I went 5 on this. So with that, if I correlate all the tab, I would tab it all up for us. So the build as a whole, we went 4.06. On the match itself, we went 4.37. And on historical, we went 4.75. So the overall total is a 4.39. So this does make this match, Steamboat Savage, a pedestal match. So guys, before we jump off, I appreciate you all joining me tonight. It was really great talking about this match and thinking through it with you guys. I appreciate the partnership. Anything you would like to plug, I will go to Ben first.
You can catch me on Twitter at BenL981. Once a month, I'm here with the special relations with Callum and Rory. You can also catch me on Wrestling's Chicken Salad, Sean and Logan, as well as on the Pop Feed Popcorn Chicken Salad with Logan, Matt, and occasionally you drop in, Sean, when you feel like it.
When schedules allowed. Schedules allowed. Thanks, Ben. Colm, how about you?
Yes, as Ben said, I am 1/3 of the Special Relations podcast. I am also one leg of the Four Horsemen on NWA Croc and Roll. I also do the Place to Be Nation Twitch, YouTube, and now Meta Live. So if you just find Place to Be Nation, all one word, on Twitch and Facebook, and PTB in Life Twitch and YouTube is Place to Be Nation, all one word, PTB in Life is Facebook. Find us on there, like, subscribe, follow. Thank you very much.
Meta Live, can't wait for Meta.
the Place to Be Nation pay-per-view live watch coming to a virtual reality headset near you.
Fantastic. Scott, how about you? Gotcha.
As these guys all mentioned, yeah, just check out the pods on, you know, PTB and Pop Experience, the wrestling feed here, NoSo, and the Jenny position. And that can be found on Twitter at Scott_Shiflet. And thank you guys for listening.
Absolutely. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at NWA Crock and Roll. You already heard about the NWA Crock and Roll podcast. Let's see. Scott and I are on a ton of pods. And the other only one I'll mention is YouTube Roulette, which is also a really fun live watch show. Not as serious as this, but we do Shawn Analytics and ranked matches on that one, too. But that one's more of an entertainment factor where we talk a lot of junk while we watch the matches versus this one. We're really trying to be serious. But I definitely probably one of the funnest pods out there if you like live watch pods. But with that, I am Sean Kidd. He is Ben Locke. He is Colin McDougall and Scott Shiflet. We will all be back for episode number 2 of Pedestal, and we will see you then in a few weeks.
Try to be best because you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe though the